Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, everyone, happy Thursday. I hope everyone is having a wonderful evening, enjoying this summer weather. This is Desiree, and I am here with Kaylin. This program is sponsored by P4P Muscle, the number one drug-free sponsorship in the world. If you are a drug-free athlete and are looking for a solid foundation to stand on and a vehicle to drive your goals, check us out at P4PMuscle.com. And now, let's talk. How are you doing this evening, Kaylin?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I was on with Belinda, and she did. I mean, it was just really something to see how the natural community is growing, and the sport is just branching out to where people can actually have lives outside, you know, and enjoy what they do, their passion, I guess, the best way to say it.
Awesome. I heard a little bit of that podcast, and it sounded like there's a lot of great information that was shared there. And I'm excited about our podcast this evening because I think that we've got a wonderful, dynamic lady that's going to be on the phone with us this evening. I described her as a triple threat, but she's really a quadruple threat. She's a pro figure competitor. She is a judge. She does contest prep, and she owns her own business called Guns and Poses. And with that, I'd like to turn it over a little bit to Candy Bishop. Candy, welcome to P4P Real Talk.
Well, thank you so much.
So how's it going this evening?
It's going awesome. It's going great.
I kind of stole your thunder a little bit by giving you an intro, but why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you got into the bodybuilding world.
Okay. My whole life I was an athlete. I started dance and gymnastics when I was little, and then in high school I did volleyball, basketball, which shocks people because I'm all of about 5 feet tall, but I did play basketball, track, and softball. I was just always really competitive and athletic. And then when I went to Iowa State, I decided to, I don't know why, but try out for cheerleading. So I became a competitive cheerleader in college, I think because I could flip and like to yell and talk a lot, probably. It just fit my personality. But then I also started teaching group fitness classes and lifting weights when I was in college. And people kept telling me, you need to compete, you need to compete. And all I would see were the massive female bodybuilders. They didn't have figure, they didn't have bikini, they didn't have any of that at the time. And I thought, gosh, I don't think I want to, you know, being 5 foot tall, I don't think I want to add a whole bunch of mass and be as wide as I am tall. So I kept doing the group fitness thing, but then they did come out with, it was called Extreme Fit at the time. They were fitness competitions where you did a dance routine with gymnastics and you showed flexibility and endurance and showed all those aspects of fitness within your routine. And that's where I got started. Absolutely fell in love with it. But here in the Midwest, there just wasn't a lot of competitors and there was not the opportunity to obtain your pro card. So they kind of switched over to the whole figure industry. And when I saw figure, I thought, oh my gosh, I'm getting a little older anyway. I'm not going to be able to flip and jump forever. So that got me into figure. And figure was a whole new ball game because coming from Extreme Fit, it was all about your routine and showing that you had the fitness components of flexibility and endurance and all of that. When figure came about, it was all about your physique. And so I had to get a lot more into the dieting and getting symmetry within my physique. So it was a great, great learning experience with that.
Okay, awesome. Kaylin, I think I heard you trying to bust in there, and I didn't give you the chance. Was there something that you wanted to say?
Yeah, I was, since he had so many areas, you know, and the first question everybody asks is, where do you find the time?
Where do you find the time?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, when it's your passion, you just make the time. It's just fun. So you fit it into your schedule, and you know, when I am actively competing, you just got to get the job done. If it means getting up extra early in the morning, or staying up later at night, or fitting it in over your lunch hour, I think most competitors agree with that. If you have that competitive nature within yourself, or if you're, you know, thinking about somebody else that's going to be up on stage there, you're going to get the job done.
Exactly, exactly. So tell me a little bit about Guns N' Poses. So this is a business that you've started, and I think you offer a lot of different services under that umbrella. Tell us a little bit about what you do with that.
Yeah, Guns N' Poses came about, you know, as in the industry, which part of it is a little bit sad that once you obtain your pro card, everybody assumes that that person is an expert, which is not always true. But right away, I would have people asking me, well, gosh, can you train me, and can you do this, can you do that, just because I had my pro card. Well, I do have certifications because I've been in group fitness and personal training for so long that I do have the certifications to back it. But a lot of people didn't know that going into it, which I thought was a very kind of scary thing, that they just assume that anybody can be a coach because they won a show. But so it came to be that I started helping people with posing a lot. They would see me do my posing routine on stage and would ask me to help with that, or ask me to help them with their diet. And I just started to realize that that need really was out there, and I loved it. I loved helping people go from barely being able to walk in high heels to just being up there, shaking their booty, doing their thing. And same thing with competition prep. It's once you've been there, it's so fun to help somebody else through it, because you know how to help them through the tough times and when the dieting and mentally when they have those rough days. And that is one aspect of somebody coaching that has competed before. They've been there, they've done it.
Exactly, exactly. And that is so important, because there are so many different little nuances to competing, or just getting in shape in general, that sometimes it's just helpful to have that insider knowledge is just going to carry you that much further.
It absolutely is.
I've seen your posing, and I absolutely love it. And I know when I was starting competing that that was an area that I absolutely was clueless about. I mean, I kind of cut my teeth by watching some videos, so I kind of felt that I had an idea about what posing was. But in all reality, I had no idea. And then, you know, throw in the factor that I was going to be in 5-inch heels when I had never worn a 5-inch heel before, much less expect to do it in a competitive stage, that just kind of blew me away. And I just think that's an area that I think a lot of women coming into it, they just have no, we just don't know what we don't know, and we don't know how important posing is.
Absolutely. And I, from being a judge from that perspective, I have seen women and men in the likeness as well that they have the perfect physique, and you can tell they have worked so hard on their diet and worked so hard on their training, and they didn't put anything into their posing, and they didn't place as they should have because of it. I've seen somebody drop from first to fifth or even out of the top five because of their posing, which is so sad, because they spent so much hard work on everything else but just thought that, oh, I'll just go up there and put my hip out and stand and it'll all be good. When there's so much more that goes into it.
And what does go into it? I mean, listen, what do judges look for? What do we need to know when we're thinking about our posing? I mean, how often do we need to practice, or what do we need to practice, or what are the tricks?
Well, ultimately, the judges are looking for symmetry. So that's the first part, is finding where you might not be symmetrical. Maybe you're upper body is a little bigger than your lower body. Maybe you have thinner legs, and so you need to pose a little bit differently. Figure girls, for example, might need to bend their knees a little bit, or from the side, they might need to stagger their legs a little bit to try to round out their symmetry. But also, I have found a lot of people, and this is, comes from my experience with my Pilates certification and my background in Pilates, people will have past injuries or muscular imbalances or things where they might have a scapula that wings, especially for figure competitors or bodybuilders, and they need to almost rehab that before they can pose properly. Or I'll find people that are just so tight, maybe through their pec muscles, that they can't open up their lats fully. And so then it's helping them get a routine with foam rolling or, you know, having get massages or having somebody help them stretch that excessively. And so there's little things like that that people don't even think about that might come into play.
Exactly. I mean, and even in bikini, even though our poses aren't as complex, they seem to be just different things just to keep in mind, like how you rotate your arm or shoulders so much, or, you know, what that toe is doing when your hip is cocked to the side, if you have to cock a hip to the side.
Exactly.
All of that kind of stuff.
Go ahead.
Definitely.
No, I was just going
to pass it over to Kaylin.
With bikini competitors, too, sometimes it's a matter of they might be a little too muscular, and so they might need to pose a little differently. Maybe they trained a little too hard or leaned up a little too much, and so that's not really what they're looking for in the bikini world. So it's a matter of posing them so that they're not accidentally flexing their muscles and things like that.
Okay, because flexing the muscle in bikini is not necessarily a good thing.
Right.
So, hey, Kaylin, some thoughts?
Did we lose him?
Maybe not. I know that he had a question, but I'm not sure that where he went. So we'll just keep going with it. So
okay.
When someone is practicing or they're getting ready for contest prep, how much time should they plan on dedicating to their posing?
You know, people always ask me first when they should start posing, and I always tell them when you have decided that you're going to do a show for sure, you need to start posing. I don't care if that's 6 months out, 5 months out. The further out, the better. 3 months out is probably, I mean, you really need to get started because you need to be so comfortable with your posing that you don't think about it on stage. Even the most confident person that's maybe done theater or, you know, talks in public all the time, it's a different ballgame when you get up there and you're in a bikini and you realize everybody's staring at me and just me right now. So they need to be, it needs to mentally just be ingrained in their head what their posing is so that they don't have to stop and think about it. And I always tell them within the last couple months, you should be spending, you know, 15 minutes a day, every day. Even people that work all day, I tell them, when you go to the restroom, do your posing in the stall. Just get a little bit of posing in all the time, and then it just becomes natural.
Nice.
Hopefully nobody's watching your feet underneath the stall. And what is she doing in there?
One turn, half turn.
Yeah, but at least it reminds you every time you have to go to the restroom, work on your posing.
Exactly. There he is. I hear him now. Kaylin, there you are.
Yes. I have a question, and it's near and dear to my heart when she talked about the group training, because that's basically where I came from. Everybody sees me as a bodybuilder, but I basically came in as a group instructor.
I love that.
But I had my background came from, I don't know if you're familiar with Les Mills.
Oh, yes. Yep.
Yeah, well, I was one of the body combat instructors.
Oh, I love that. That's good stuff.
So when you said that, I can see where that cheerleading really came in handy, because having to do your routine and still talk over everyone else and still make it to the end of the class, it takes a lot.
It does. It really does.
So, you know, I can see that with having that kind of that energy and lifestyle, why you could be so charismatic, because it's basically in your DNA where you're so used to it, it's second nature. And that I really appreciate the energy you're even putting on this show right now.
Oh, gosh, thank you. Yeah, it is, you know. And, again, when you're passionate about something, you just – you can't wait to talk about it, and you can't wait to teach people about it and just help them and hope that they get the bug as well.
Oh, that's so true. So, so true.
And that's what we're hoping here now, too. So, and I just know that I've always really appreciated, you know, I've been in your posing classes. So for anyone out there who's listening, if you're wondering about posing, you're not sure how to get started, you're not sure where to go, you know, check with your coach. They may do some posing, or they may know somebody in the area that offers posing, or if you know anyone else is competing, ask them where they go to. I know that's how I happened to find Candy, and I'm so glad that I did, because she was a lifesaver, because I really had a lot of misconceptions about what I needed to do, and I really feel like if I hadn't gone to a posing class, I would have gone up on that stage and just froze. And I do
yeah.
think that would have impacted, you know, my overall performance. And I could have walked away from that show having no idea of what went wrong. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, even after 3 years of competing, I still have fine-tuning to do with my posing, and especially on the T-walk. And, Candy, why don't you tell us a little bit about what a T-walk is for someone who may not know that that's part of the posing game when you're getting ready to get on stage to compete?
It is, yeah. So, of course, you have your, I would call them mandatories, your quarter turn if you're a figure girl, or your half turns if you are a bikini competitor. And recently, the T-walk has not been judged, but previously the T-walk was heavily scored. It is, I should take that back, because it is if you compete in NGA. If you compete in NAMBA, for OCB, it's no longer judged. But in NGA, it is still such a huge component of your score. And you're not even just scored against yourself. That's how it used to be. It used to be scored like a 1 through 4, 1 being you rocked it, 4 you need a lot of work. Now you're actually scored against the other competitors. So if there are 10 competitors, you're scored 1 through 10. And that's where you could come in with the best physique, the best symmetry, the best conditioning, and then if you're a 10 on your posing, it's going to completely change your placing.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Yeah.
And then another checking the organization that you're actually competing in. It might be close, but you might be so far off with the preparation that you might get blown out the water because you came in with the wrong concept.
Exactly, yeah. So the T-walk, they do call it a T-walk because you make the shape of a T, you stop at center stage, you walk up towards the front, center, and then you veer to the left, walk all the way over to the right, back to the center, and then off the stage. So you do, your route is a T-shape, that's why they call it a T. Now some are doing U's, some are doing Y's, they're making all kinds of fancy letters up there.
It's all in the alphabet. So,
yes,
and
it
one
is.
Thing that I do want to... That I do want to put out there, though, is even in certain federations or sanctioning organizations, whatever you want to call them, even if the T-walk or the U or the V or whatever we're calling it now is not judged, if it's a tie between you and the second place person or vice versa, they will bring your T-walk into play. So to feel like, you know, well, why am I worried about my T-walk because it's not judged anyway? Well, it could. I mean, it could really impact your placing. And when you're looking at it from the crowd's perspective that came to see you and cheer for you and support you, that is really your
yes.
time to shine. The turns are, you know, that's the technical part of it. But the team walk is what you get to make your own, put your personality into it, do the poses that you like, that you feel represent your body the best. So it is a lot of fun. So I would encourage, you know, competitors out there, if you have a choice to do your T-walk or not do it, I would encourage you to go ahead and do it. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Especially, I tell them that too, that their friends and their family are there to see them, and they don't just want to see them turn from the front to the back. They want to see them get up there and show some swag. So shake
show
it.
Show some swag.
Work it.
Pop those glutes.
I was going to say, with the T-walk not always being judged, though, I really tell competitors to work their half turns and work their quarter turns. They have to clean them up even more than ever and show some personality during them, because there used to be that T-walk to show, that's where they would judge your grace and your poise. That component's no longer there always, so you have to show your grace and your poise and your personality during your mandatory turns. So that's another reason to really work them every day.
That is, and that is a great point, because I can tell you from experience, and probably a lot of competitors are, that sometimes when you get out there and those lights hit you, your brakes go blank, and you're like, quarter turn, what's that? Where is my foot at? You know, am I popping my buns enough? What are my shoulders doing? What is my hand doing? Am I pointing? Am I not pointing? And so, I mean, there's a lot of concentration that it does go into it. It is a little more complicated than what it might seem if you're not practiced and rehearsed on it.
It is. And one of the biggest mistakes I see competitors make is practicing with a mirror all the time. They just forget that there's not going to be a mirror on stage, and they get up there and look like a deer in headlights. Where is my mirror? So I always tell them just to videotape themselves. There is nothing more brutally honest than videotaping yourself and seeing how you actually look, even just how you walk. You know, you might feel like you walk normal, and then you watch it on video, and it might be an eye-opener. Maybe you don't swing your arms, or maybe you swing your arms too much, or maybe you cock your head to the side or something. But it's just always so good to video your walk, video your turns, video your T-walk and all of it.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And in that way, at least you have something that you can compare to, more so than the mirror, and get more consistency going there.
Exactly.
Yeah, three times a charm. Just one quick point here. For anybody out there who's listening, if you want to call in and ask a question for Candy, you can reach us at 657-383-1476. Or if you are logged in online, just scroll to the towards the bottom of the page there, and you can leave us a message there, and we'll be sure to address your question and get an answer out to you. So this is interactive. Give us a call or drop us a line. We want to hear from you, and we want to answer your questions. So another area that you focus on a lot with your contest prep and in your own contest prep is nutrition. What are some of the important things? What are some of the maybe some of the areas that really need to be talked about that aren't being talked about when it comes to contest prep?
You know, I think it's finally being talked about more, but I think, you know, metabolic damage is one of those things that just really needs to be talked about again and again and again until people understand that it's real. If they are with a coach or just doing it on their own and thinking that it has to be extreme, you know, doing two-a-day cardios and doing barely eating any calories or only eating certain foods, only eating asparagus and only eating chicken that's boiled in distilled water. I mean, there's just lots of crazy things that are out there. Cutting their carbs down so low that they can't even think straight. Just, it doesn't have to be that way. And I think a lot of people think it has to be extremely painful to get onto stage. And if you plan ahead and start early enough out, it really should be, for the most part, an enjoyable journey. Yes, there's going to be days that are mentally tough, and there are going to be days where you're hungry, but it shouldn't be to the point where your hair is falling out and your skin is ashy. and what the risk of that is, then when they go back to normal life and normal eating, especially if they don't take a slow course back of reverse dieting, is they're going to end up with that metabolic damage where their metabolism is just going to crash and they're going to gain a bunch of weight. They're not going to be able to lose the weight again when they try. So I think a lot of times people just coming into the industry get caught up with, again, thinking that there's a bunch of voodoo involved. Especially I hear that with peak week, that peak week has to just be crazy stuff, you know, only eating while doing a headstand. I'm joking with that, but seriously, I hear stuff that's crazy. And I'm just like, you know, honestly, your body wants homeostasis, it wants to stay pretty consistent that last week. If it doesn't, you're more likely to retain water and things like that. So just knowing that they're with a coach or that they've done their research, that they're doing it the right way.
So talk to us a little bit. What are some of the telltale signs? I mean, everybody's probably different, but what are some of the telltale signs that you don't have a healthy metabolism?
If they don't have a healthy metabolism, honestly, it's just killing them to lose weight, and if they're having to do excessive amounts of cardio to get anything, to get the scale to move, and it's not just all on the scale, of course. You've got, you know, your measurements, your body fat percentage, and ultimately the way you look. A lot of the girls that I judge, I have to constantly remind them it's not the scale. There's no scale on stage. There's no measuring tape on stage. It's how you look. You can look the same at 120 pounds. You know, you can look differently, is what I mean to say, at 120 pounds. So it's not just always the scale. But if you do have metabolic damage, it is going to be that you're even more cardio, cutting your calories back even further, and you're gaining weight or something like that.
So then how do we fix it? How do you go about getting back to good?
You know, it's a process, and people have to start out with slowly bringing carbs back in, finding that.
Oh, my goodness,
balance.
Bringing carbs back in. You did not say that.
I know, I did. It honestly is. And I personally have never worked with anyone who hasn't been able to repair that, but I have heard that some people can damage it to the point of, you know, it's broken. I don't know if that's true. I've never personally trained in that.
Yeah. And that's sad. Honestly, you know, you come from a group fitness. You see everybody making tight in your class, and there's the people that are just gifted and they do the class effortlessly, and then you got the people that struggle, but they're never going to give up. I don't care what you do, and they just keep going. And I say, then you got somebody that would just come in with these crazy, off the wall, you know, like examples of how they're going to jump the gun, get ahead of the class, but they don't, because they're basically damaging their bodies to the point where they don't get back. And that's the first time I saw metabolic damage, was actually in one of my group fitness classes, where nothing was adding up to what they were doing. And that's an immediate telltale sign that something's way off. And, you know, the bloating, I've seen where the Snickers bar, they look like it added 5 pounds simply because they were so carb-deprived that their body was just snatching up any kind of nutrient it could get. And this fella was really thinking, you know, he had figured it out off of that's when you hear me speak about bro science, that's what I'm, when it's so much disgust for it, is because I got to see it firsthand. And this guy is still maybe 2 years out before his metabolism gets to where it should be.
Right. Yeah, it is sad. And they're in that more is better mentality, and all the overtraining and the under eating, and their body is just begging them to take a rest day and to eat that Snickers bar.
Yeah.
It's crying out. I'm waiting for the day for my body to cry out for a Snickers bar. just because peanuts and chocolate sounds good. All right, so I do a lot of advocating against junk sugar. I know it. I'm not perfect. Every once in a while I want it, especially a peanut M&M. But what I think we're talking about here, when we're talking about carbs, so let's not, because people out there are probably saying, what are they talking about? They totally got this twisted. Well, we actually don't. But I think what we need to be clarifying here are nutrient dense carbs and your junk carbs. And you have the, you know, if it fits in my macros, okay, great. I've seen that too, and I've seen people get great results on that. I don't know that I am a student if it fits in my macros, But, I mean, I think definitely, and Candy, I don't know, you let us know kind of how you coach your clients and especially how you go through that process if they are severely carb deprived, how you get them back up and what is it, you know, that you're recommending to them to be looking towards for their carb sources if they're in a state of a metabolic damage, or if they're even just, or if they're healthy and they just want to stay healthy, what is it that you're advising out there?
You know, every single client I have is different, honestly. But sure. I will say that I have had some come to me that I could tell right away. I usually take just a couple of weeks and just assess what I think would be normal macros for them and set them on those and see what happens with their body. Do they all instantly drop some weight? Do they instantly gain weight? Or do they just kind of stay the same? And you can tell with somebody like that over, you know, those first 2 to 4 weeks how their metabolism is. And sometimes they'll have something else like a thyroid condition you might throw in there that likes to, you know, mess their stats up every now and then. But for the most part, you can tell within 2 to 4 weeks how it's going to go. I do train my clients a little bit more with, you know, if it fits your macros type of thing. I just don't like to say that anything is off limits, but I also don't encourage just filling your carbs with a whole bunch of empty carb calories. And I'm sure. I'm all about volume. If I find something with volume, I'm on it. I like to eat massive amounts of food. So if it looks like it's a lot of food, that works for me. But every client I have is on different macros. I do know, you know, as they start to get, you start to deplete their carbs, and there's even times where you have to back off just because of how they start to tell you they're feeling mentally or something.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there might be a key indicator like that, that it's just not worth to push them any further, and you back it off, and maybe it just lasts for a week or so, and then they can go down a little further. But everybody has a different bottom for their carbs, I believe, and somebody's might not, you know, somebody might be 130 grams of carbs, and they go below that, and they just can't deal, and it's not worth it. I try to remind my clients and just anybody that I get a hold of that's competing that competing is something we do, but it's not who we are, and it's not worth lifelong damage or risk, or, you know, you're not going to compete for the rest of your life. And I worry about people that choose to go the non-natural route as well, because again, that's their decision. But I think sometimes you have to think long term, especially for females, and do you want to have kids down the road, and do you want to, there's just a lot of risk involved there. So
yes.
Yeah, most definitely. Just a lot to think of and to keep in mind. So there's two parts to the food equation, especially when it comes to contest prep. You have the getting ready for, and then you have the coming back to reality version of it, the reverse dieting.
Right.
What are some of your thoughts on, because, I mean, I think there's a lot of athletes out there, if they're doing their own prep and they don't have a coach, that they have no concept that there even is such a thing as reverse dieting, and they aren't sure how to come back down on this after show, and if they don't come back down properly, they're really not sure what to do with all the weight gain they have after that, because a lot of times binging is a natural thing, and maybe not binging in the sense that you just eat until you're sick, but you're just eating everything in sight and anything you want because you can't. The show is over, right?
Absolutely.
Can
I jump in right quick, ladies?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There was a show, because it's just so funny. I won't mention names. There's no point. There was a show where I saw a guy. I mean, he had been on prep for so long that the disconnect mentally happened when he started eating, and he was still throwing food at his mouth when he couldn't even chew anymore because he'd gone into an insulin coma.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and I was there to see it, so it's not like hearsay or gossip. This is something I got to see for myself. He was still stuck on go with the food because he had craved it for so long. His body had just shut his brain off, and he was literally throwing food at his mouth, and he couldn't even chew.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's what we don't want to happen.
No.
Yes. You know, and I've competed for so long that I've done it all. I've done the, just, you know, many, many years ago when you hadn't even heard of reverse dieting, you know, you would just eat whatever you wanted after the show. And honestly, it would take me probably 6 months to maybe even up to a year till I felt like my metabolism was back to where it needed to be. Felt like it would eventually come back, but I'm not going to say I didn't gain more weight than I wanted to. And for any competitor, it's depressing afterwards when they do that, because here they've had what they consider this ideal physique, which is not maintainable, but you get into that crazy mindset that maybe it is because you're low on carbs and you're thought processes aren't right, and so it is sad for anybody going through that.
So, and for everybody listening, they're probably thinking, oh my gosh, if they're not a competitor, they're thinking, I'm never going to be a competitor because this just sounds awful. This sounds awful. It's awful coming back from it, but it doesn't have to be that way, to your point you had earlier. Go ahead, Kaylin.
Well, I like what Candy was saying about, you know, now in the day, there was a lot of ignorance, and it was spread out to where it sounded like truth because people were doing it. But I think that because so much of the enhanced realm had infected a lot of the natural community, they saw something that really wasn't real for natural athletes. And that's the recovery time. Because I can give you an example. When I was getting ready for my first show, there was another natural, and I put that in quotes, air quotes, that was getting ready for a show as well, but in the NPC. And we're both going, you know, ham, whatever you want to call it, beast mode, whatever the hashtag is for the day, we'll go with that. But we were going at it. And I realized, like Candy said, some people are different. I had to step up my morning and night routine, and he was doing one workout a day, and then he'd sit down and have Burger King, McDonald's, you know, and he's getting leaner by the minute. Now I'm trying to keep the weight on without losing too much muscle. And I'm saying, you know, he was trying to convince me that he had the right way of doing it, but he never told me about the enhanced stuff he was using to get those kind of results. Whereas I was, you know, doing everything to spare as much muscle as I could. He was gaining weight as we went along, and you know, he thought that was the funniest thing in life. But he was also training another guy that ended up getting injured big time in like the rotator cuff and the pectoral because he was basically depleting just like I was from a natural metabolism, I guess the best way to say it. And mm-hmm. he was breaking down while the other guy was, you know, getting better.
Right. Yeah, I think we've learned a lot over the last 10 years, 15 years, whatever it is. I mean, and that's why I always tell people I've done it all. I've competed so long that, you know, what we thought was, it's just kind of like back in the 90s with fat free was the best thing ever. I mean, I did that too.
Oh, yeah.
And now we know it was the worst thing ever.
Yeah, I ate all kinds of gummy bears because they were fat free.
Right? The GNC, have you run? Protein.
Yes. But yeah, no, I agree. Somebody that is listening is probably thinking, you know, OMG, I'm never competing. But that's where I go back to. It honestly, it can be such a great journey if you do it the right way. And you're going to challenge yourself getting outside your comfort zone, whether it be, you know, just hitting weights harder than you ever have before, or stepping on stage in a bikini in front of people. Everybody has, you know, what is driving them, and it can be such a rewarding experience. And then if you take the time to reverse diet afterwards, your metabolism just plugs along, and then you decide to do another show, and it's not an issue. It's when you don't that you decide, oh, I want to do another show, and then you have issues.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing with people that compete too often. I personally feel, and people need to take time off, and just, you see girls that get hung up, or, and I'm sure guys too, just compete and compete and compete, and I'm like, when is your off season? You just have to give your body a break.
You do, and it's not only to help your metabolism repair, but if there are improvements you need to make or gains that you need to make, you can't make those when you're in a constant state of leaning down.
Yes.
Yeah.
The body is not going to do it, because you're not feeding it the way that it needs to be fed. And it does need calories.
Exactly.
You know, and that's one thing when you're, I mean, and that's one thing that I think that it's helpful for new competitors to understand. If you've been around for a while, even if you're not competing, what is that? Even if you're not competing, but you're just wanting to get to a healthier place, you know, there are, depending on your level of health, there are instances where you may need to be low carb for a while until you hit certain goals. But after that, you know, you can't be so afraid of the carbs that you never introduce it back into your body, because your body actually needs it. I mean, it's an energy source. It helps a lot of things internally function correctly that won't if you don't have it.
Right, your brain needs it. You need that glycogen in your brain and your happy hormones and all of that. You've got to have carbs.
Yeah, and you need glycogen to build muscle.
Yes.
So, and for those who don't know what that is, I'm going to put you on the spot, Candy. Can you give us a definite glycogen 101? What is that?
Glycogen. It's ultimately, it's what's produced in your brain, and it helps with the serotonin in your brain, which is the feel-good hormone. So, you know, sometimes when people are depressed, they will actually go on antidepressants that will spike their serotonin levels. So ultimately, carbs can cure your depression.
There you go.
As long as you know good stuff and go overboard with it.
Yes, but yeah, back on those that don't want to compete too, with Guns and Pulses, and not all of our clients compete. A lot of people just want to look like they do, and of course we don't get them down to that level of leanness. Some people, and I always encourage them to do something like a photo shoot or just have a goal, or whether it be their birthday coming up, or kind of have that end date to where I want to look my absolute peak best on that date. And then go through the same process of reverse dieting like you would if you were in a competition. And ultimately, you hope that then they end with a very stable macro set where their carbs are higher than they ever imagined that they could be. And it's more of just a lifestyle from that point. And then they decide if they have new goals, if they want to gain more muscle, and you increase their macros from there.
Oh,
yeah.
Exactly.
The thing that always frightened me, especially when social media started really coming into its own, is from the competitive side, there just seemed like it was a miserable time for the competitors. And I had no interest in bodybuilding because of that. But then the thing that really frightened me because of all the certifications was the weight gain. And I was always taught, you know, my mother was a nurse, so I grew up in health and fitness, whether I accepted it or not. And she was always talking about massive weight increase or decrease was incredibly hard on your body. And I would see people posting, you know, hey, I gained 40 pounds overnight. What? I don't want to do that.
That would definitely blow your mind.
Yeah. I mean, And you figure if you were a normal person, think about that. You know, would understand it a lot easier than somebody that's just coming on the social media and seeing that and going, well, what the hell? That's the last thing I want. You know, this man bragging about it.
I see the same thing.
No,
but sometimes I see people saying, I gained 40 pounds of muscle in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I'm like, what?
don't take a drug.
Yeah, I want to say, or, you know, are you sure that's muscle?
Yeah, exactly.
Somebody's in denial.
Right? I'm, and then it goes to bulking. Yes, I'm bulking. No.
I'm bulking. Well, I mean, there's just a lot to take into consideration. I mean, this is a complex sport, but it doesn't have to be overly complex. Just a lot of things to keep in mind. There is more to it than just lifting of the weights. Nutrition, definitely important. You want to do that right. Can't stress that enough. The posing,
yeah.
Definitely. You know, got to have it. So for anyone who wasn't really sure about, you know, how important it was, I hope if you take nothing away from this session is that it is, and to do put some emphasis on it, it can really help you, you know, either place well for the first time or, you know, or improve your standings if that's been an area for you that was kind of lacking previously. So just in general, Candy, what do you have, just some basic tips for our veteran competitors and our newbies, just thoughts, motivation, you know, things that you had wished someone had shared with you when you were just getting started?
I think the main thing is finding a qualified coach, for one. I've tried lots of different coaches. I try different ones because I like to learn from every single one I've had, and I've had some really high-named ones that were not necessarily the best. You know, it's like just because their name is in lights doesn't necessarily mean they have the best knowledge as well.
Yes.
So, and ask questions. If you have a coach and you're asking questions and they're annoyed by it or don't want to answer it or tell you to research it on their own or call you a kindergartner, which I had one do that, you know, just that's a red flag. If they're having you do things that you think this is odd and then they can't give you an explanation of why, or even if they do give you an explanation and the explanation just doesn't seem to make sense, again, just red flags. Always look for those red flags. And with the veterans, I mean, posing, again, you can never work your posing enough. Even if you've been doing it for the last 10 years, you can always do things better. Your body changes over time. Your symmetry changes. You're not going to pose the same way that you did 5 years ago or maybe even a year ago, because your body's going to be different if you've been taking your off-season and making gains. And one thing, new competitors, sometimes I know they're afraid or shy or don't want to come to a group posing, because I often do group posing classes, but I will tell you that once they do, they tell me that's the best decision they made, because I do private sessions, but the group sessions are so fun because they get to know the other competitors. And then when they go to do that first show, their nerves are less because they look next to them and they're like, oh, I feel like I'm at group posing. I've posed next to her for the last 3 months. I feel so much better about it. And it's just more fun because you have people backstage to hang out with and to help you with your makeup and to glue your suit and that kind of thing. So don't be intimidated by a group. I know they think, well, I've never done it before. I don't want to show up and be that new person in a group of people that know what they're doing, because half of them don't know what they're doing. And then the ones that do love to help the new people. So a group environment is so fun. I'll just throw that out there.
And I would agree. And plus, it's always helpful just to see what other people are doing or how they're doing it. I mean, on the road to finding your own style and what works best for you, sometimes it's trial and error of mimicking what someone else does and like, that's not really, it doesn't look the same way on me like it looks on her. But then it just helps you find what does work best for you and that you're most comfortable with. So
that is so
true. You know,
yeah, the same pose looks so different on two people. And that's why it's good to have a routine that's made specifically for you and not something that somebody else just said, oh, I think I would do this and this and that, because you need to do what looks the most natural on you, especially when you're being judged in your T-walk. I always encourage girls to do what they're comfortable with, because if they do a pose, say it's fancy or whatever word you want to use, but they don't look comfortable or they look awkward in it, they're definitely not going to get points. They're going to get points for looking smooth and graceful in their transition in and out of it.
Yep, exactly, and I would agree. Kaylin, any last thoughts on your end?
Yes. One of the things that she's talking about is so important, and it's the practice of it. And if you are truly passionate, then practicing posing is not an issue. And the camaraderie that happens at the shows, at the seminars, and at the posings, everybody finally gets to be around people that understands them. And that's the one thing we forget, because we're such outcasts in normal society. It's nice to be welcome when we walk into these arenas and venues, and everybody says, yeah, I get you. You know, I understand where you're coming from, and it's not insane. And, yeah, you do make sense. And, well, a lot of what you do is insane, but I still understand it.
That's so true. That is so true. Yes, and you can look out in your community. I know John and Becky Arnold do some great seminars in the Kansas City market and St. Louis, and there's some in Minneapolis all around. There's just some really good seminars and posing sessions and just competition 101 type.
Mm-hmm. And it makes a difference. It makes a big difference, because, the one thing I do appreciate is that everybody wants to help, and it's because you want a good product. And, you know, I'm not saying that, like, people are a commodity, but if they want to be their best, I can't imagine a team never practicing. Or, you know, any organized sport team not doing something together to where they learn to get better, you know, on a better level. And I said that was a lot of things that were missing in the natural community, because we were basically, you know, it was a lot of misinformation. And you know, the people that were coming from the enhanced realm didn't really know about the different organizations and the criteria that went along with them. So basically, you'd have an NANBF amateur show, and you go into an NGA criteria. And they'd get
right.
Walked all over. And it would be the worst show, experience, everything for that person in their life.
Yeah, it's worth taking the time to research the federation and the show, and even talking to the promoter. What do you expect on our walk? What, you know, how's the show going to go? They're always so helpful and happy to help.
Yes. They want
yes.
to ask them a question.
And it really helps to go watch a show before you compete.
Yes.
Yes.
I've had people that just, you know, and I'm not going to say it's a bad thing, but I'm like, oh, my goodness, you've never even seen a show and you're competing? Go watch one.
Exactly. I take them everywhere, and they're going to go and see the show. They're going to help me do the Midwest Muscle. Somehow or another, I'm going to trick them out, sneak them in if I have to get them to understand this is what you're getting into. Because, you know, it's such a different mindset from gym ready to stage ready.
Yes. And they're both great, but they're different.
Yes. Oh, my goodness,
yes.
A front-held class gym doesn't cut it at all on stage.
Well, Candy, I can't thank you enough for joining us tonight. I've loved the information you share. I've loved the energy that you've brought. You're just an all-around, like I said, you're a quadruple threat, and a definite credit to to the industry. So thanks so much for sharing your time with us this evening.
Oh, gosh, thank you so much for having me. You guys are a blast.
And Kaylin, thank you for sharing your perspective with us. I'd like to invite everyone to join us again, same bat time, same bat place next week. We are going to be talking about a very different topic, but still one that's coming into its own as a sport, and that is pole fitness. So if there's anything that you wanted to know about pole, never knew about pole, wanted someone to explain to you about pole, but you just didn't know anyone to ask, we're going to be the place to ask those questions. So be sure you join us next Thursday, 7 p.m. We're going to have some great guests on that are going to be able to share a lot of information with you. So on behalf of Candy, Kaylin, and myself, this is P4P, where your body is a temple. So let's build it.
All right.